Passage to Mutiny, written by Alexander Kent and read by Michael Jaston.
Where lies the land to which the ship would go? Far, far ahead is all her seamen know. And where lies the land she travels from? Away, far, far behind is all that they can say. Arthur Hugh Clough. Chapter 1. All Things Remembered. It was almost noon, and the sun which blazed across Sydney Harbour was pitiless in its intensity. The sky above the capital of the infant colony should have been bright blue, but it was blurred as if seen through a crudely made glass, and the air around the waterfront buildings and anchorage alike felt gritty and humid. Isolated, and apart from the varied collection of local shipping and heavier merchantmen, a man of war stood above her reflection, as if she had been there forever, as if she would never move again. Her ensign flapped only occasionally above her high poop, and the Commodore's broad pendant which flew from her mainmast truck was only a little more enthusiastic. But despite the heat and discomfort, her decks were alive with watching figures, as they had been for some while, since another British man of war had been reported entering the anchorage. The Commodore leaned his palms on the sill of his cabin windows and withdrew them hurriedly. The dry wood felt like a heated cannon. But he watched, nevertheless, conscious of the unusual silence throughout his command, as the newcomer crawled closer and closer across the glittering water, her masts and yards, and then her curved beakhead, taking shape and clarity above the haze. The Commodore's flagship was the old Hebrus, a small two-decker of 64 guns, which had been ready for disposal after nearly 30 years of service. Then she and her Commodore had been given just one more commission. Now, on this October day in 1789, anchored a senior British naval vessel in Sydney Harbour, she was still expected to act, if need be, with her old efficiency and relish, although many of her officers secretly believed she would be hard put to reach England if her recall was ever offered. The other ship was a frigate, common enough in times of war and at any other place, where their agility and speed might be required at short notice. But out here, thousands of miles from home and familiar faces and customs, a king's ship was rare, and all the more welcome. Her presence accounted for the Hebrus's silence. Every man watching her painstaking entrance in the merest breath of wind would be seeing her differently. A town in England, perhaps. A voice. Children he could barely remember. The Commodore grunted and straightened his back, the effort bringing a prickle of sweat across his spine. It was absurd. The new arrival was the 36-gun frigate Tempest, and she had never been to England at all. He waited as his servant padded around him with dress coat and sword, the trappings of officialdom and ceremony, remembering what he had heard about Tempest. It was strange how circumstances could affect a ship's purpose, as well as the lives of the many who might serve her. 6 years earlier, when war with the American colonies and the Franco-Spanish alliance had come to a close, ships which had been worth their weight in gold in battle were, like most of their companies, no longer wanted. A country soon forgot those who had fought and died for it, so a ship's survival seemed of even less importance. But peace between the great powers had never been very secure, at least to those who had been involved in the price of each bloody victory. And now there was renewed tension with Spain, which could just as easily fan into something worse. It was over rival claims to various territories, which each hoped to exploit for trading and colonial purposes. Once again, the Admiralty had been directed to search around for more frigates, the lifeline of every fleet. The Tempest had been built in the Honourable East India Company's yard at Bombay just 4 years back. As with most of John Company's ships, she was constructed of the finest Malabar teak and to the best available design. Unlike the Navy, the Company's ships were always built with long usage in mind and with some regard for those who had to work them. The Admiralty's agents in Bombay had purchased her for the King's service without her ever sailing under a Company flag. She had cost them £18,000. The Admiralty must have been desperate to pay such a princely sum, the Commodore thought privately. Or else, as was equally likely, a little extra gold had changed hands in other directions. He gestured for his silent servant to offer him his telescope,